All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from our Lake Wissota studio on this Thursday, November 3rd, 5 days until Election Day. Coming up this morning, no surprises at the top of the new Marquette poll, the final one before the election. The big races are too close to call. Welcome to Wisconsin. But can we learn anything from a deeper dive into the responses from those hundreds of people surveyed in the Marquette University Law School poll? We don't know. We'll check somebody who does, though. Political analyst Joe Zepecki will provide us with some insight. We'll also hear from Nicole Slavin of Moms for Mandela about the group that got started by people, again, spurred into action by the Dobbs decision of right-wing Supreme Court justices stripping away reproductive health care rights for women. We'll also talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil and find out what he's been covering and some of Courier Newsroom's other outlets. Tops among them, letting the readers in all of our states know about the Republicans' economic agenda, because for some reason, the Republicans don't want to talk about their economic agenda. And we'll have reaction to President Biden's speech last evening about the path to chaos posed by those who lie about elections and threaten violence. If you want to reach us, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Our phone number is 715-388-7155. And Aaron is in the producer's chair this morning. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well today. Not a lot to say. Staying hydrated. How about yourself?
Hey, we got, five more days to just, keep the ship between the navigational buoys, as Jimmy would say. If I sound a little tired, it's because I stayed up a little bit past my bedtime, being the baseball fan that I am. But I was very strategic about turning the TV off in the World Series game between the Astros and Phillies, game four, turning it off once it became clear that there was a potential no-hitter situation going on. Christian Javier was perfect through 5 2/3. And I shut it off right there quickly, impulsively, because if I knew that if I saw the third out, then he'd been perfect through six, I'd have to stick with it. A no-hitter, through six. I'd have to stick with it. And I just thought, no, that's we have little tiny phones with screens that can replay things. I will catch it later. And sure enough, I woke up this morning and the first news alert on my phone is that Javier and three other pitchers combined for only the second no-hitter in World Series history. The other one, of course, is the one that, will live forever, Don Larsen's perfect game for the Yankees against the Brooklyn Dodgers back in 1956. There's never been a no-hitter in World Series history until now. And this one was a combined effort because Christian Javier was up to 100 pitches after six innings of work. So it was definitely the right decision to do this by committee. His fastball, I tell you what, that's something, you mix that in with the slider and you just, the Philadelphia bats, which were on fire the night before, five home runs, but they could not figure out Javier at all. And ultimately lost that game 5-0, and that evens the World Series at two games apiece. So that's my excuse, Aaron. I don't know that you were up watching baseball or anything like that.
No, I went to bed pretty early last night. But that is incredible, though. And also, look at that self-control. There we go.
You're
going
right
to bed early.
Yeah, see, he's learning. He's learning. Meanwhile, for the Bucks, Giannis had 32 points, 12 rebounds, and the Bucks matched a franchise record with their seventh straight win to open the season, beating the Detroit Pistons last night 116-91. Milwaukee is now 7-0. It matches the starts of the 2018-19 and 1971-72 teams. Jrue Holiday, who was uncertain to play because of a non-COVID illness, added 26 points as well. The Bucks shot only about 26% on three-pointers. They've been a little chilly from behind the arc lately, but they outscored the Pistons inside. They out-rebounded them and forced plenty of turnovers. That's what the script here says. This is clear. I watched baseball and not the Bucks game. The Bucks avoided defeat, even though Chris Middleton and Pat Connaughton haven't seen the court, with Middleton recovering from offseason wrist surgery. Connaughton had a strained right calf. The Bucks next go on a road trip of one single game. It's out to Minneapolis to play the Timberwolves. And the schedule here says the Friday night game starts at 9 o'clock. So obviously made for TV. Somebody's got a doubleheader or something going on. And then the Bucks are back home. So we have, like I said, a lot of ground to cover with the president's speech, with the Marquette poll. You're going to want to stick around and hear what we talked about with Joe Sopecki about the issues that are at play. Because, look, if you were... Let's say you're not a Democrat, you're not a Republican, and you don't even consider yourself an independent. You kind of want to know, am I pegged more into one party or the other? Just listen to the priority issues of the respondents who self-identify as Democrats or Republicans, and you'll see how we are a country that is talking over each other right now. And then, you know, the self-described independents have a mix of priorities that are both Democratic and Republican leaning, and you can sense their frustration as well, that people who self-identify to the left or right just can't seem to get along. But I would argue, along with the president and others, this is not a two-sided thing. There's one side that is really exacerbating things, and we'll have more about that from President Biden's speech coming up next. You're up north. Welcome back over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. You get the latest article from Kiev Akil on something he'll actually be telling us about a little in our next segment here, about the Republican Party's economic agenda, what it includes, even though they don't really want to talk about it. On the feature side of things, a freelance writer gives us an article on the four best small towns for small business shopping in Wisconsin, and also the six best things to buy on Black Friday and how to tell if you're getting a good deal. So look for those at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Warning that democracy itself is in peril, President Biden last evening called on Americans to use their ballots in next week's elections to stand up against lies and violence and dangerous ultra-mega election disruptors who are trying to, in his words, succeed where they failed in subverting the 2020 election. This is no time to just stand aside, Biden said, quote, silence is complicity. After weeks of reassuring talk about the economy and inflation, Biden, part of his closing message is a little darker. It's a little more urgent, declaring in these final days that the nation's system of governance is under threat, and it's under threat directly because of former President Donald Trump, and also, the lies and the violence that, you know, Biden says that he inspires. The president singled out what he calls ultra MAGA Republicans, a reference to Make America Great Again, calling them a minority of the Republican Party, but a driving force. He pointed in particular to last Friday's attack on the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and said Trump's false claims about a stolen election have fueled the rise of political violence and intimidation. Here's a bit more about what he said, laying responsibility firmly at the feet of the former guy.
You know, American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refuses to accept the results of the 2020 election. He refuses to accept the will of the people. He refuses to accept the fact that he lost. He has abused his power and put the loyalty to himself before loyalty to the Constitution. And he's made a big lie, an article of faith in the MAGA Republican Party, the minority of that party.
At least we hope so. We hope it's a minority of the party, although, again, Marquette poll results will show us that while there are some signs that Republicans haven't become as polarized as we might all fear, there is still quite a bit of lockstep with Trump when it comes to their feelings about the 2020 election, all facts to the contrary. The president's speech focused squarely on the right of voting and counting that vote, and it amounted to a plea to Americans to step back from the inflamed rhetoric that has heightened fears of political violence and challenges to the integrity of the elections. Biden was basically straddling two roles, speaking as both a president, but also as a Democrat trying to boost his party's prospects against Republicans. And as such, he called out hundreds of candidates who continue to deny the 2020 election result and are now refusing to commit to accepting the results of the upcoming midterms.
This is also the first election since the events of January 6th, when the armed, angry mob stormed the U.S. Capitol. I wish I could say the assault on a democracy had ended that day, but I cannot. As I stand here today, there are candidates running for every level of office in America, for governor, Congress, attorney general, secretary of state, who won't commit. They will not commit to accepting the results of elections that they're running in. This is a path to chaos in America. It's unprecedented. It's unlawful. And it's un-American. As I've said before, you can't love your country only when you win.
Exactly. Un-American is a strong word to throw out there. But once upon a time, so was lie. That was a word that was almost never used in journalistic circles or in anything, even candidates themselves. You didn't hear the L word very often. And if you did, it got people's attention. Because again, in what now seems a kinder and gentler era, you just didn't accuse somebody of lying unless you could prove it. Well, now with so many proven lies out there, you do hear that word quite frequently. And unfortunately, you also hear it used by those who are doing the lying, to no surprise. And now we're hearing the word un-American that's out there. And again, it's something I think that the folks like Biden, people like me who are using it, aren't using it with any sense of comfort or even strategy, but only because this is the moment that we live in right now, where those who would actually threaten American democracy don't seem to have any problem with what they're doing, whether it's, you know, something like rigging maps to win supermajorities or inspiring violence, like what happened to Speaker Pelosi's husband on Friday.
And I think that when the Republicans do use that word, the way that they use it is very telling. Like, for example, what we just heard President Biden saying is these are the things that they're doing. They're impeding democracy, and that is un-American. Meanwhile, you have Ron Johnson in his debate with Mandela Barnes just saying, oh, he had a great upbringing, but I don't know why he hates America so much, without giving any examples, just saying it to inflame people.
Yeah, there's just a lot of inflaming going on, because again, people who can't win on the merits of their arguments will turn instead to emotion. So Biden's speech comes as election workers nationwide are questioning whether to go back to work following increased intimidation and harassment ahead of Election Day. So far, at least five people around the country have been charged with federal crimes for harassing workers as early voting gets underway. Reports of people watching ballot boxes in Arizona, sometimes armed or wearing bulletproof vests, is raising serious concerns about voter intimidation. Election officials nationwide are bracing for confrontations at polling sites, and a flood of conspiracy theorists have signed up to work as partisan poll watchers, which again is going to give some people pause. And it's why the president again asked people to think long and hard about the moment that we're in. Now, obviously, some Republicans have been very critical of Biden's remarks, calling Biden divisive. It's something that, again, Ron Johnson has said repeatedly without any trace of irony, that it's Mandela Barnes who's being divisive when you put up racist ads and try to give people the impression, you know, that what happened in Kenosha over a couple of days is now a 24/7 thing. And, you know, Wisconsin Dells is going to burn to the ground any time now if we don't put, you know, everybody in jail. or whatever it is their anti-crime agenda is, because again, we haven't heard it. We haven't heard an anti-crime agenda. We haven't heard a police reform agenda. And as you'll hear later, we haven't really heard an economic agenda. But such are the times that we're living in right now, is that when you can't win on the arguments, you go for emotions. I think the recent, this year's primary issue of abortion rights is perhaps most emblematic of that, that abortion was always put out there as a binary choice, that it's something you either get as an elective form of birth control, or you just don't have it at all. And our friend, Dr. Kristen Lierley, among others, they've been masterful at reminding us that there's an entire spectrum of pregnancy care, of shades of gray, that should be discussed when you're looking at, you know, all of the options that are out there. And simply appealing to emotion about your concept of, you know, when life begins and the taking of it, again, gets away from the medical realities that women are experiencing. And so it goes with so much of this. Polling shows consistently that while people say they're safer than ever, or they say they're safe, they feel they don't feel endangered, they also report a high concern about crime. But that's because they're getting bombarded with messages about crime, and therefore, again, believe that it might be on their doorstep. The power of the media is tremendous, and frankly, still underappreciated. As we mentioned, I think yesterday, there were right around 1,500 stories, news stories done about rainbow fentanyl, that was going to be in the Halloween candy, and that our children were facing, you know, impending doom. And yet there weren't any reports of that actually happening in candy, because again, nobody's giving drugs to kids. They may be smuggling drugs because, you know, in rainbow colors and such to make it easier to smuggle, but not to actually give it to the kids. These are expensive. They have to go to paying customers, I believe, is how the drug business model works. But again, you get everybody all whipped up into a frenzy. Just like, was it 2 years ago? Was that the immigrant caravans? Was that, it first started 4 years ago. Were the migrant caravans that were coming up here? I mean, there's always something like that. The difference now is that with each cycle of ramping up the rhetoric, with each cycle that says the our country is being run by people who hate it, you know, by saying Mandela, Barnes, and other people hate our country, it only makes it more likely that somebody is going to hear that and want to act upon it. And they have been, from the attack on Speaker Pelosi's husband to the, you know, the armed gangs now trying to intimidate voters, to people dressed in nice suits, but when they come into state capitals, they're passing laws to suppress voters or to even overturn elections, you know, when that time comes. Such is the era that we live in now, and where we can't be afraid at this hour to speak up about this and to say, you know, this is a bridge too far. This rhetoric is too much. These actions are too much. And frankly, it's why as many people as have already are either not voting Republican for the first time or taking a break at this point and saying that they would, you know, just as soon not support somebody. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in their editorial yesterday, endorsing Mandela Barnes and Tony Evers, asked Republican voters, well, if you don't feel like you can vote for a Democrat, at least don't vote in these races. Well, a top-ranking member of the Republican Party of Wisconsin referred to that as voter suppression. Again, without a trace of irony, saying that, you know, by asking people not to vote in the two marquee races amounts to voter suppression. I mean, that's rich to be able to say that that's what that is. Again, what it demonstrates is a fear to play on the field of ideas and policies. And as a result, you get the rhetoric that we have now. And that while, again, in the Marquette poll, you're going to see Democrats are concerned about some of the very real issues out there, like abortion policy and like gun safety, gun violence in our schools. Their concerns are more conceptual and aren't going to be solved by any politician, much less a Republican one, who might be using it only to win that election and then do nothing else. We'll talk to Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, right after this. You're up north. Just a reminder that our phone number here is 715-388-7155, if you'd like to get in touch with the show. Before we talk to Kia, we're going to mention Social Security, and that's part of the Republican economic plan, is to, you know, put it on the potential chopping block. Here's what President Obama said when he was in Wisconsin over the weekend about Social Security and Ron Johnson.
Some of you here are on Social Security. Yeah. Some of your parents are on Social Security. Some of your grandparents are on Social Security. You know why they have Social Security? Because they worked for it. They worked hard jobs for it. They have chapped hands for it. They had long hours and sore backs and bad knees to get that Social Security. And if Ron Johnson does not understand that, if he understands giving tax breaks for private planes more than he understands making sure that seniors who've worked all their lives are able to retire with dignity and respect, he's not the person who's thinking about you and knows you and sees you, and he should not be your senator from Wisconsin. I mean, the message he's sending is pretty clear. If you're related to him, if you donate to his campaign, you get a deal. If you're not, you're out of luck and you're on your own.
And Courier Newsroom national correspondent and deputy political director Kia Vakil joins us now from LA. Kia, how are you?
Hey, Pat. I'm doing well. How are you?
Well as any of us can be, with only a few days left before the election. Some people are campaigning, some are volunteering. And then there's people like you being a writing machine, writing articles for all of the Courier Newsroom properties, talking about the election. And one of your more recent articles talks about the Republican Party's economic agenda. Now, I found this interesting because if there's one thing Ron Johnson has never wanted to talk about this year, it's his economic agenda. He'll talk about, you know, crime. He'll talk about CRT. He'll allude to litter boxes, anything. He'll say there's inflation, but not talk about it. But as your article points out, there is an economic agenda out there.
Yes. And, you know, Johnson's sort of evasion of the issue, you know, talking about inflation, but not actually talking about policies or what his agenda is pretty much the entire Republican Party's approach. And yes, as it went up live earlier today, my latest piece, which sort of dives into what Republicans have said they would do if they won back control of the Congress, or signaled they would do in a few cases. And, you know, to be clear, they've put out a lot of documents this year full of all sorts of crazy things, but this is cobbled together from their own statements, from some of those documents, and from just, you know, things they've said to reporters and to voters. But yeah, their agenda is really unpopular, which is why you don't hear them talk about it. But it includes, they've come out within the last 2 months and said they want to extend the Trump tax cuts, which famously helped billionaires and corporations more than working class families. They've said repeatedly that they want to reform Social Security and Medicare and cut spending on it by raising the eligibility age and maybe cutting off benefits for certain people above a certain, you know, income threshold. And they want to repeal Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which has lowered the cost of drugs for seniors. So that's just some of it. But, you know, you just hearing that, you sense, you know, why they don't talk about it, because no one supports those things.
No. And in fact, when they talk about inflation, But they don't mention the Inflation Reduction Act, except for the parts they want to repeal. Again, the silence is just deafening. But you go on to mention, for example, you know, the federal minimum wage has been locked in place for quite some time. Shouldn't look for that to change if Republicans win Congress on Tuesday.
No, that's been at $7.25 an hour since I was in high school. And for context, that was 13 years ago. So, you know, they blocked, you know, efforts to raise the minimum wage in recent years. They, you know, in many cases, like Ron Johnson outright opposes the concept of a minimum wage. So, you know, $7.25 an hour is just appalling. I don't know it of any county in the country where anyone could work 40 or even 50 hours a week and survive on that income. A lot of states have obviously raised it above that, but you know, I believe Wisconsin's is $7.25. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, Wisconsin's there, Pennsylvania's there. That's a poverty wage, and Republicans will not touch it. They also don't really have a plan for paid family and medical leave. They've opposed those efforts in the last couple of years, which would allow, you know, parents or just family members to take time off work to care for a newborn or a sick elderly parent. And these are things that have like 70, 80, 90% popularity in polls that they oppose.
Oh, and there's that new Marquette poll that, you know, came out on Wednesday, and it says, you know, what do you think about requiring businesses to provide paid family leave for new babies, for newborns? And, you know, the margin was 73-18 statewide, which was not a surprise. 95% of Democrats, 65% of independents. But even 62% of Republicans responding to the poll said that companies should be required. I even then don't really see that happening, because as soon as you talk about requiring a company to do something, I mean, Ron Johnson suddenly, you know, develops a rash. It's not going to happen despite the popularity of it.
No, I unfortunately, you know, the moment the word requirement or rule or anything comes into play, Republicans and their donors spin it into the somehow the cruelest possible twit version of it and run tens of millions of dollars of ads scaring people to death about it, that their small business is going to fall apart. It will not. And, you know, there are ways to do these programs where it's doable. Other countries have figured this out. Europe, most of Europe, if not all of Europe, has figured this out. There are countries that have over a year of paid leave for people. So, you know, it's doable. It's just there's no appetite on the right, and there's not the way the Senate is structured. There's not enough support in Democratic circles of the 50 senators who are there to get rid of the filibuster. But, you know, yeah, it's just there. If you put individual policies to a direct vote of Americans, all of the things we're talking about, raising the minimum wage, expanding paid family leave, supporting Social Security and Medicare, lowering drug costs, would pass probably by that same margin, 73-18. But that's unfortunately not the way things work. And, you know, Republicans are able to really gum up the works.
Well, and assuming they would be able to work on this, again, what you've outlined for us, extending the Trump tax cuts, cut spending on Social Security, Medicare, repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, keep the minimum wage stagnant, block paid family medical and medical leave, and repeal the estate tax. Kia, I'm not an economist. I'll be the first to admit it, but I'm really not hearing anything there that would actually fight inflation.
No, and I'm not an economist either, but there are economists out there who have explicitly said that those policies don't fight inflation. There's a gentleman by the name of Michael Strain, who is an economist at the American Enterprise Institute, an extremely conservative organization. And he said, he told the Times that it's, quote, unlikely that any of the policies proposed by Republicans would meaningfully reduce inflation in 2023. That is, again, an economist at a conservative institution. So, you know, and they know Republicans, many of them are not idiots. They know that their policies are unpopular. It's why they don't talk about it. It's why Mitch McConnell has not released a Senate policy agenda and got so frustrated when Rick Scott released his really unpopular one. They know that the way they win is by creating division and stoking fear based on immigration and race and, you know, yes, capitalizing on the real problem of inflation. But like we've talked about, they don't have a solution.
No, they don't. And so consequently, what they want to get done which again is not inflation related, but more politically and ideologically directed, means that they may take on some unorthodox ways to get it done, because obviously President Biden is still going to be there for 2 years and has a veto pen. So for those of us and people out there listening going, well, wait, isn't this all academic since there's a veto pen? You kind of dropped the other shoe in your most recent story, reminding people that Republicans have held the economy hostage before and are willing to do it again. How would that happen next year?
Yeah, so there's this thing called the debt ceiling, and it's just a number that Congress makes up that basically says this is the amount the American government can borrow in debt to finance the difference between what they take in taxes and what they spend. So the debt ceiling is a number. It gets routinely increased by one Congress after another. If they failed to increase it at any point past by that date where it expires, it's sometime in the fall of 2023. I don't have the exact date. If they failed to increase it, it would effectively cause the United States, the most wealthy country in the world, to default on its debt. And because the U.S. is this global superpower and the rest of the world in many ways revolves around our economy, it would cause a total global financial crisis. And so this, you know, they've come close to doing this in the past. They've threatened it. You know, Republicans, they've tried to use it as a political football. But even they, even, you know, the Tea Party, you know, eventually, and, you know, in the past, Ted Cruz, even they eventually, it was a bridge too far for them. But at this point, we're seeing powerful Republicans like Kevin McCarthy, who's in line to be House Speaker, say they will basically use this deadline to try to force concessions on spending, which is code for Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and a lot of the programs that help people survive.
We're talking to Kiev Akil, national correspondent and deputy political editorial director for Courier Newsroom out in LA. And as we switch towards something a little bit closer to home, I note that you have been working along with the other national staff on all the various ways to let our state audiences in Wisconsin and elsewhere know about voting and elections and absentee voting and different rules that are out there. And so as somebody who has to look at all of these from different states, what kinds of themes do you feel need to be emphasized for folks listening in Wisconsin? And what, is there anything about Wisconsin that maybe, you know, stands out to you, you know, good, bad, or colorful?
Yeah, I'd say the two things to keep in mind are, one, Tuesday's election day, but it very well could be election week. And that's because in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in many states, election officials cannot process or count the hundreds of thousands to millions of mail-in ballots that are cast. So that means that they can't do anything with those until 7 a.m. on election day. So that takes time. That's a lot of ballots. And so in a competitive state like Wisconsin, for all of those to be processed, counted, tallied, double-checked, and a winner to be announced may take a few days. So that's just something to be prepared for. The second thing is, during that time, you may see people try to spread conspiracies or claims of fraud. That's not the case. Just because it takes time to count millions of votes does not mean something bad's happening. So that's one thing. The second thing I would note is that in Wisconsin, it's not the hardest state to vote in, but it's certainly not one of the easier ones. You know, Right. They make it show, you have to show a voter ID to vote early, varies by jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I'm in California. We all get a mail ballot sent to us. I submitted mine on Sunday or Monday at a Dropbox. I got an email today saying it had been processed and was in the count. So, and a lot of states are like that. Arizona, a purple state, it's a lot easier to vote in Arizona than it is in some places. So, Yeah. You know, voter suppression is a thing. Erecting hurdles is a thing. And in Wisconsin, the Republican legislature has specifically tried to make it harder to vote and to make it take longer to count votes so they can spin these claims of fraud.
Mm-hmm. Election watcher and long-suffering Phillies fan Kiev Akil is with us. Wish you all the best, especially over these next few days for two different reasons, elections and the World Series. Good to see you.
You too. Thanks so much for having me on.
And we should note, it should surprise nobody that we talked to Kiev last evening just before the start of his long-suffering Phillies getting beat by a combined no-hitter by Houston. And we did it that way because, as you heard, he's in L.A., and that would be just downright cruel, asking him to appear with us at 4:30 in the morning. I don't have a lot of time to share it now, maybe later, but on a related note, this morning's Washington Post includes analysis from Allison Schrager from Bloomberg Business News, who, again, is or leans Republican, does not like a lot of what Democrats are proposing, but gives Democrats at least credit for spelling something out, for having a plan, because the things that Republicans have talked about so far in this campaign are shallow bullet points, and very few of them would actually have real economic impact to help with inflation. We'll take a look at this day in history and more coming up after the break. This is Up North News Radio.
Shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
Well, we lost the killer this past weekend, Jerry Lee Lewis, at age 87, and it was on this day in 1957 that tune right there, Great Balls of Fire, was released by Sun Records. Obviously his biggest hit. It reached number 2 on the pop charts back then and sold a million copies in its first 10 days of release, and would go on to sell 5 million copies worldwide. Let's move our way up to the late 70s right now, and the Eagles, whose Pandora station I think I was listening to about 4 o'clock this morning getting ready for work. Anyway, their 6th album, The Long Run, hit number 1 on this day in 1979, and it stayed in that position for the rest of 1979, for 9 weeks at the top. Working our way to the 80s now, one of the quintessential 80s songs, for reasons I'm not sure, it's just an earworm that gets stuck there, but Billy Ocean's Caribbean Queen hit number 1 on the charts this day in 1984. And I feel like we've come from the Eagles, then to Billy Ocean, and then by the 90s, I feel like we kind of hit bottom here, because the first rap song ever to hit number 1 on the U.S. singles charts, Vanilla Ice. This was originally the B-side to Play That Funky Music, but after skyrocketing into popularity, subsequent releases had Ice Ice Baby as the A-side. I feel like we've learned nothing. A couple of birthdays of note, and talk about polar opposites of the spectrum. Roseanne Barr turns 70 today. Dennis Miller turns 69 today. And one more anniversary to share. It was on this day, 2 years ago, in 2020, that Joe Biden defeated Donald Trump. For real. Fact. Mark, calling from Prairie du Sac. We talked earlier about the president's address last night and criticizing those who are stoking violence. And Mark, that's still a concern to you.
Yeah, it's still a concern to me that I noticed that none of these Republicans, up and down the scale, that none of them have come out and just outright unqualifiedly condemned the attack on our democracy on January 6th, and the continued attack on our democracy with the election deniers. In fact, some of them continue to say, we'll deny the election. Then also on the debt ceiling, that what the president should come out and say, and the Democrats' position should be, is the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, Section 4, actually talks about that the debt of the United States shall not be questioned, period. I mean, pure and simple. In unambiguous language, it says our debt shall not be questioned. So, I mean, I think the debt ceiling is just simply an illusion that the Republicans have used to, to hold the country hostage, and that's how it should be met. I mean, the president should just come out and say, do you not understand what the 14th Amendment to the Constitution says? You don't understand what Section 3 says about insurrection, and obviously you don't understand what Section 4 says about the nation's debt. I mean, and challenge them that. This is the Constitution that they took an oath to uphold, up and down, even in state offices, they take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States as well as the state constitution.
So well, we and we've seen definitely that oaths and promises just don't seem to mean a lot, whether you're, you know, Derek Van Orden, who was, you know, actually insurrection adjacent, who's now running for a seat in Congress. Certainly the Second Amendment talks about how our right to bear arms is protected in the form of a well-regulated militia. That part seems to be lacking from folks. And I think just as troubling to me, Mark, is the whole notion of the way, not that Republicans aren't criticizing the violence. Oh, they find a way to, but they wrap it in both sides-ism. And that's the part that's been especially galling, is to say, well, you know, what about this or what about that? There aren't really any assassination attempts, you know, that we can really point at, except for the one deranged individual shooting at congressional Republicans, who again, that gets us back to mental health and gun availability, if you will. But yeah, it's the both sides-ism that is confusing voters and really putting us in a bad place right now. Hey, the Wednesday night show is back, and that means we're going to need to clear up some confusion here, because here, Up North News Radio is the new morning program here across Civic Media on all of its radio stations, put out by Courier Newsroom, which runs Up North News and 8 state-based outlets total. So that's Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, all on Civic Media. But for a time, this all began as a little podcast that then was picked up by one of these radio stations, and it was called the Up North Podcast. And Kirk Bangsted and a rotating wonderful roster of co-hosts, which now includes Dr. Kristen Lyerly, helped make that show what it is. And then it got tucked away once Up North News received a full-blown radio show for 3 hours in the morning from 8 to 11. Well, now we're here from 6 to 8, but the Up North Podcast is still part of the landscape, and the Wednesday night show picked up right where they left off without me, which is fine. It's time for them to fly out of the nest. So Kirk and Kristen had just a great show last night on the Madison radio station featuring Randy Bryce, the Iron Stash, former congressional candidate, and then two current legislative candidates, Joel Jacobson and Leah Spicer. And if Leah's name is familiar, we talked about how she is the focus of a new article in the New York Times Magazine about how this may be Democrats' last stand in Wisconsin because of gerrymandering, making it all the more critical that there is a high voter turnout next week. And Leah's journey toward a reluctant candidate to becoming a candidate, and also a nice review of Democratic Party history, both state and national, to tell us how we got to that point. So again, that's on Wednesday nights. I believe it was only on the Madison station last night, but I think, and I don't mean to be speaking for management, but I think it will be on many, most, or all of these fine Civic Media radio stations next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. So be listening for the similarly named but completely different Up North Podcast. All right, I was mentioning before, and I've got just a little bit of time to get back to Alison Schrager from Bloomberg, talking about the lack of a Republican plan. And again, as somebody who leans Republican, she acknowledges that, you know, Republicans like to talk about standing for limited government, lower taxes, less regulation and spending. But she writes, it's a mystery how Republicans intend to fix a low growth, high inflation economy. They talk about curbing wasteful spending, and there's bullet points about encouraging energy independence and strengthening the border and cutting illegal immigration, but there's no mention of reforming or fixing the problems with legal migration, and that's the kind of thing the country needs to propel growth. She says Republicans should be explaining to Americans why putting entitlements on a more sustainable path is a fiscally responsible thing to do, instead of remaining silent when Democrats accuse them of gutting the program. She says Republicans are trying to have it both ways, with more spending and interference in some areas of the economy accompanied by more tax cuts. Perhaps that will win the midterms, she writes, but it won't help the economy. Again, bottom line to Republicans, where is your plan? All right, we're coming up in our 7 o'clock hour. Well, we will have Joe Zepecki on the Marquette Poll and Nicole Slavin from Moms for Mandela. This is Up North News Radio.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire!